And now, a sermon from South Highland Presbyterian Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Established in 1888, South Highland has a rich history and tradition of sound Bible teaching in our historic sanctuary. Listen now to the word from South Highland.
I told the 8:30 service that if by any chance some powers that be came and said my continued ordination as a Presbyterian pastor, minister of word and sacrament, depended on my being able to produce one dozen sermon manuscripts from my several decades of preaching, I would be toast. I've preached on many passages, including the one we're talking about today. I have probably preached a series like this in at least two other churches, possibly three, out of the far greater number in which I've served as a called or interim pastor. And I'll just say this, I believe that amazingly enough, God chooses to work through imperfect speakers, mouthpieces like pastors or lay leaders, among imperfect people in an imperfect world to urge us further into God's perfect and perfectly divine work of uniting all things in Jesus Christ. So I believe that though I'll not say exactly any of the same things probably that I've said a couple other times in a series like this, I promise you this, I'll never say anything, even if somebody else may have written part of it, that I don't believe and that I have not personally experienced. And my promise to every congregation and every individual always is I'll never preach to you a sermon that I myself do not desperately need to hear, and in which I myself might desperately need to grow. We're all on this journey together, and I trust and pray and invite you to trust and pray that God will speak very directly and powerfully to us and among us in these seasons. So, I was telling somebody in the worship service about this passage and the sermon series the last week or two, and I love it when people don't just give to some random pastor the deference to go, "Yes, pastor, that sounds really good." I said, we're going to be looking together at this series. Court and Abby will be part of the series. Larry will be part of the series. We'll all be taking our part in this. I said, this is a great series for people that are in a transitional period or an interim time. I said, when there are storms, when there's uncertainty, when there's anxiety, when there may even be fear about the present or the future, when there are questions about survival or how we'll survive or in what manner we'll survive, there's no better passage and topic than this one. And I loved it. They pretty much came straight back in my face. And they said, "Well, you've been around South Highland for a little while. Do you see people everywhere wringing their hands? Do you see people fearful? Do you see a lot of anxiety anywhere? Like, we're not going to make it, or we're not sure how this is going to unfold?" I said, "Well, actually, no. I'm sure there's more than I've seen. I haven't seen that." And I said, "Well, so that's, to me, an even greater reason to have a conversation like this in the transitional period. Because, honestly, no offense to you all, I'm going by experience from other churches, both ones in which I've served and other ones I've known of and observed. If people are calm in the interim, it's because that usually because they're super confident that soon enough our highly competent pastor nominated committee will find a good candidate that will come in and we'll call them and they'll quickly get us back to comfortably and effectively and efficiently doing the things that we have learned through the years so well how to do. Oh, sure, things will be a little bit better, but certainly not different. And I've stood in pastor conferences when there were groups of people standing there. In a couple of cases, one in which at least three people in the circle had all talked to the same congregation pastor nominating committee that was currently engaged in a nationwide search for their next new pastor. And I will say to you, this is not necessarily good news. One person said, well, you know that what they assured me most for anybody that came, they said, oh, don't worry, we're ready to change when our next pastor gets here. And a whole circle of seasoned pastors broke out in uproarious laughter. Everybody says we're willing to change and we're all for change until it's changing the things we value most in those parts of life and faith with which we are most comfortable. Now, as I look around this congregation, I see what I see in most congregations, and I'm right in there with you. I see a lot of people who, in my estimation, we would call chronologically gifted. Is that true? That's true of our denomination as a whole, and it's true of most congregations, including this, and it's true of me now. I passed a pretty big milestone birthday a month or two back. A few people in this room sang happy birthday to me on it. I don't even like saying it out loud yet. It's getting on. I don't think I'm going to keel over like, you know, today or tomorrow. But I do need to acknowledge this to myself. I don't have nearly as long to live, to obey God, to trust God and to serve God now as I did earlier in my life. I don't know for sure, but I'm certainly closer to the end of this part of my life now than I am to my young adulthood when I was back here. Not so long ago, but a number of years back. Possibly even to my middle age. So I'm not speaking for you, but I want with whatever years or months or whatever it is I have left, I want to be growing in faith. My favorite thing would be that somehow by God's grace, I can trust God more in days ahead than I have ever yet trusted God in all the days past. And I'd love to think that maybe that would be an aspiration for a congregation like this. Now, I haven't even met the whole pastor nominating committee. I know some of you are in the room now. I'm going to go way out on a limb. And I'm going to suggest that I already know who your next pastor is going to be. Everybody, what? Yes. Hold up. Pause a beat. Not the name of the person or the exact person, but I'm pretty sure that I know with God's help and your prayers and the work and discernment of the pastor nominating committee and the congregation, I'm pretty sure I know at least this much about who your next pastor is going to be. It's going to be somebody who is in a deep and growing love relationship with Jesus Christ. Does that sound legitimate? And I'm going to trust and pray and believe that whoever it is going to be someone who feels called to lead you and to walk with you into a deeper and more faithful and more courageous love relationship with Jesus Christ, perhaps than this wonderful congregation has ever yet seen. That's what I'm praying. I can pray what I want to pray. You guys pray whatever you want to pray. But here's the thing. If we're serious about growing in faith, if we're serious about leaning on God more than we ever yet have, the way God works in people's lives and in the lives of groups of people is God continually invites us to step away from all that is most precious and in which we put the most trust and from which we derive the greatest security in order to find our sufficiency in God alone and to live in a way that is impossible as long as we rely only on our own strength. And all through Scripture, you see it. You see it with young and with old. God basically invites people, calls people, maybe even commands people in one way or another to get out of the boat. Abraham, big success, well established in Ur of the Chaldees. Prestige, privilege, family connections, social connections, wealth, standing in the community. And God said, Abraham, here's a great idea. Leave every bit of this behind at a late stage in your life and follow me. And there's a land out there somewhere I'm going to give to you and to your descendants. And if you're wondering about the word of encouragement, the author of Hebrews said, yeah, Abraham spent his whole life looking for a city not made with hands, and he never found it in his life. But his faith, his obedience was counted unto him as righteousness, and every man or woman of faith since calls Abraham and Sarah our father and mother in the faith. Moses wasn't qualified. He couldn't do this kind of stuff. I can't talk, God, and I've got a bad record. Got a police record in Egypt. I'll probably get arrested if I go back there. I'm only living now at the beneficence of my father-in-law who gave me a nothing job out in the wilderness looking after sheep. I'm not your guy. And God said, who's the one that made you? And who's the one that made your tongue? And I will give you words and I will help you. And Moses did something that he never, ever could have done. We still talk about it in redemption history today because Moses was willing to hear God's call to get out of the boat. He was willing to hear God's assurance, I will be with you. He was willing to trust God in all the chaos and the turmoil and all the threats, both from the Egyptians and from his own people. And he was able to be a part of changing the history of the world because he heard God's call and he responded and he stepped out of his safety zone. Now, one of the reasons it's important for us to do this kind of thing in interim or in transitional times is that we often have kind of a misguided notion of what the Christian faith is and thereby what a good next pastor is going to look like. We do have this notion that the pastor, a lot of times, we need somebody that'll be a good shepherd of the sheep. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here a little bit and say, well, there's only one true shepherd, and that's Jesus. So your next pastor won't meet all your demands or all your hopes or all your aspirations for how wonderful a quote-unquote shepherd they are. Hopefully they'll be reasonably committed to that in an imperfect human way. But here's the other thing. We tend to think our pastor's job is to try to help people feel contented and comfortable in this congregation. How many people here think Moses was the right person to lead the children of Israel? Anybody raise your hands if you think so, okay? Most people would. They'd say, yeah, Moses was the guy, right? How long did it take the children of Israel to start railing and complaining when, with God's help, Moses led the people out of Egypt after 400 years of captivity? 400 years of captivity and enslavement. God hears their prayer, provides a leader, releases them from Egyptian bondage, and how many days did it take for the people to start complaining? One day. One day. Folks, I don't know who your next pastor is going to be, but to the degree that they follow the path of faith themselves and work with elders and deacons and so many wonderful lay leaders to track on the path God is leading this congregation to follow, I guarantee you it won't be something that makes everybody happy or comfortable. Because the definition of growing in faith is seen in this passage of hearing God's call to leave behind everything we trust in and to again and again depend on God alone. So, here's the thing about water walkers. And that's a good metaphor, a good analogy for everything in your life, every place that God will invite you again and again to step out, to try something new, to let go of a crutch, and to depend in new ways on God's faithfulness and God's power to the impact of God's glory in your life and in the world around you. And the same thing for congregations. There's always a call from God, and we need to discern when it's God's call and when it's a random idea. When I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, everybody in Charlotte knew about the Mary Kay Church. It was this giant monstrosity of a building. I don't even know how many stories. Huge glass wall, biggest, one of the biggest pipe organs in North America. Down a long, heavily traveled road, you were facing that church on that building, on that lot. And it was painted bright pink. I don't know what the story of that was. And it was outrageous. And my understanding was that two or three different congregations had tried to, you know, take that on, sure that they had a word from God, and every single one of them went bankrupt. So, now, it's not for me to judge, but I'll confess to you, I have a pretty hard time that original group of people were discerning God's leading and God's wisdom when they built that big thing. Maybe they were, I don't know. But what we need to do is discern together and individually, is it God? Where is God near? Where is God speaking to us in ways that we might not have attended to? We were so busy tending to our boats or trying to row our way out of problems. I love what Facebook meme. I passed it on. Yeah, I'm one of those people that passes on Facebook memes. It says, God's looking for to the church for spiritual fruits, not religious nuts. And we're not saying do stupid things. We're not saying do outrageous things in themselves. But I will tell you, as we discern God's will, as we follow God's will, as we obey Jesus' voice, we 100% will find ourselves at times, both individually and sometimes corporately, doing things that make our neighbors go, Not exactly best advice. Not too many examples in best practices, and yet we will find ourselves hearing God's call to do something a little bit strange. The second thing we'll find out if we're water walkers is we will get out of the boat. This is a terrifying thing because it always means that we leave behind something we've been depending on, something that we thought was integral to our faith or to our abundant life or whatever it might be, and that we can't possibly follow God or be a good Christian or be a good family member or be a good church unless we continue to do this thing this way. Sometimes it's a location, sometimes it's a practice, sometimes it's a way of discernment, sometimes it's a level of dependence or independence of prayer. But when God is inviting us to get out of the boat, it'll always be something that's at some level at least mildly disconcerting, if not absolutely terrifying. And that doesn't in itself mean it's not God asking us to make that decision. I'll ask you this. What's your boat? And what's our boat? I love John Ortberg's observation that if we will pay attention to our fears, they'll tell us something about what boat we're depending on. What is it in your life that makes you absolutely terrified to give up, or at least quietly determined to hold on to? For some people, it's a certain kind of success, maybe in a certain kind of business. For other people, it might be a certain family balance of affairs that really needs much deeper conversations than anybody has had in a long time. But the idea of that degree of honesty and vulnerability is so terrifying that we just kind of skate along the surface of family life and relationships, terrified of what might happen if we actually were brave enough and faithful enough to get out of the boat. For some people, it's their parents' approval. And I'm not a counselor, but you'd be amazed how many conversations I've had with people who were living their whole lives and often not very happily or not very well. Sometimes getting degrees, sometimes continuing in a certain line of business, sometimes allowing parental approval and expectation to determine who I marry and whether or not I have kids and all these things. So our boat is a subconscious, often desire for parental approval, and we're terrified to think what our lives would be like if we got out of that boat and depended on God alone. For some people, it's a certain standing in the community and a certain level of material security. That's what happened, I believe, with the rich young ruler who was invited by Jesus, who recognized that not for everybody, but for this young man, his possessions and his privilege and his wealth were the one thing that stood between him and a gloriously wealthy and free life of faith. And he invited the young man to get out of his boat. And the young man just couldn't bring himself to do it. And you wonder if years later, sometime in all his wealth and position and power and prestige, he ever thought back to that day and wondered what his life would have been like if he had had the courage to get out of the boat he so desperately depended on and held on to, and to walk across the water to the one who says, "Follow me, and I will be your sufficiency always." I'll just say again, I believe that we have a strong and powerful human tendency towards security and towards comfort, and I'm right there with everybody else. I don't know about you. I don't know about this congregation. I suspect it's sometimes true of a good, long-standing, established, healthy congregation like this church, is we tend to look back at the wonderful times we trusted God in the past, but we're not too eager to take on any new big challenges now. We tend to think, personally, I do, and we tend to think corporately that that's for the young people, that's for the young congregations, that's for the young family. I've taken my risks in my life, I've trusted God in my life, and I just want some comfort now. In other words, our boat's pretty well appointed. We've even had some capital campaigns to make sure it's comfortable. We've installed baffles so that the waves of circumstance and difficulty and trials won't rock the boat too much, because we don't want any of us senior saints to be, and I'm putting myself right there, any of us senior saints to be uncomfortable. And so what we want now is comfort. What we want now is security. What we want now is contentment. What's the best-selling recliner brand in the United States? Lazy Boy. Lazy Boy. We like our comfort. We like to sit there. We like to, people say, "I'm going to go home and veg out." We even say, "You know what? I'm just going to be a couch potato for a little while." And there's a certain tendency, whether with individuals or with groups of people, maybe even church people, to say, "You know what? We've taken our risks. We've done our work. We've, rode through storms. And we just want to be pew potatoes for a little while. And we want a new pastor that'll come in and just make sure we're comfortable, that we can rehearse the past with gratitude, we can enjoy the present fellowship with contentment, and we can look forward together to that day where there won't be any more trials or troubles or pain or suffering or tears, and we'll all be comfortable together forever." And here's what I believe. God is inviting you and me to listen to God's voice and to identify in our lives and in our life together what the next boat that we get to step out of, in order to experience a kind of faith and freedom and joy that we would never otherwise know. And there's only one thing that we can say about this whole enterprise is this: if you want to walk on water, let's pray that God helps us do that in days ahead.
You've been listening to The Word from South Highland. Be sure to subscribe so you can take these messages along with you anywhere, anytime. For more information about our church, visit southhighland.org. We'll see you next time.